This is Lewis Lovehog from Atop the Fourth Wall, and this is CNN, or rather, Made of Fail.
Hello.
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 Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
I think I speak for everyone here when I say, huh?
Here we are now. Entertain us.
Made of Fail.
We never promised content.
Okay, at this point, you're abusing sarcasm.
Come on, let's get this gay show on the gay road. Help me out here.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome yet again to Made of Fail. I am Kevin.
I am Dana, and we have with us today, returning this despite the fact that we're us, Lewis Lovehog, a.k.a. Linkara from Atop the Fourth Wall, and that guy with the glasses.com. And Kevin, I am so glad you're back, man. I train wrecked the last episode.
I noticed.
I mean, sorry.
Yes, you guys did fine without me. What am I talking about? Yes. Wonderful.
Lewis, that was very ominous, dude.
Thank you.
It's good to have you back, man.
It's good to be back, Dana. I'm glad to be here.
First of all, I want to say congratulations on being part of that guy with the glasses.com's 1 year anniversary festivities.
Yes, definitely.
Well, thank you very much.
I've watched every single video that was done while you guys were there. It's like a gateway drug.
And there's still more to come.
I know. How long were you guys there?
It varied depending on which person. I was there for about 3 or 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
Spoonie was there for about 5 or 6 or so.
Well, he had to get through all the girls.
Yes. Handsome Tom and 8-Bit Mickey were sadly only there for about a day or two. Same thing goes for Lee Davidge of Lee Is Still Gaming. So it was sad that we only got to see some of them for about a day or two, but it was very enjoyable, very fun. I loved it. Had a best time of my life right there.
Yeah, well, the best part is that there's so much good stuff that's been coming out of it, and all of you are just so amazingly talented and hysterically funny. I've been watching people that I never watched before.
You should. These are great and talented people, and I highly encourage you to watch every single one of them.
I'm really glad that you've chosen to slum it here at Made of Fail. it's like everyone needs to just pick up a hooker once in their life, you know?
Oh, pshaw, I say to that. Because I love this podcast. I don't listen to it as frequently as I should.
Yeah, or at all. I'm sorry.
But you guys are fun to be around. You talk about geeky stuff, and we're all about the geeky culture right now.
Before we get to that, I have a bone to pick with you, young man.
Uh-oh.
You were in reach of the angry video game nerd.
Oh, God.
And you were so busy being productive and not realizing that the entire world revolves around me that you didn't stop to get an autograph for the world's most rabid nerd fangirl.
Dana?
Yes?
Dana?
Yes?
Breathe.
No.
Chill out.
So, is he hot? Is he nice? Are his lips soft? I bet he smells like Mountain Dew and Pwnage.
Well, I only got to feel his lips 3 times. No. Actually, the idea of an autograph did not come into my head, which I'm feeling very bad, very, very bad about.
You
not just
touched him! I mean, you touched his fist with your face, but can I touch your face where he punched you?
Go right ahead, but I'm
Dana.
Yes?
Less creepy, more talky, okay?
Okay.
Come on.
Both.
Nobody loves obsessive fangirl, Dana.
Oh, dear.
Okay, anyway, we have content. I know we totally lied, but we do.
Content, that's crazy.
It's a first for us here at Made of Fail, but actually we do have plenty of things to talk about. For instance, I, as many of you have known, which is why I did take that short hiatus, have recently moved. I am no longer slumming in my parents' basement, sitting around wearing my red Star Trek shirt that they gave me to kind of tell me that, you know, something.
You're not going
to
last very long?
Yeah, something along those lines. I'm gonna come up against a strange space creature about 30 minutes into the episode of the basement and, you know, just show that the rest of the family should be taking this seriously. No, I got this absolutely gorgeous apartment. I will have some pictures up in the MetaFail community at some point, sometime soon. I know I promised Dana a whole bunch of pictures that she'll get before you guys. Sorry, but she asked first. But no, this is absolutely wonderful. It's not too far away from my old house. It's actually only about 20 minutes from work, so...
Kevin, nobody needs MapQuest.
I'm not giving them... Okay, sorry if I slip into tour guide mode. And on the left... but...
You mentioned content.
We do. So yeah, while I was doing that, you know what's been happening on TV?
What's been happening on TV?
Dollhouse.
Yes!
We've been watching this for a while, and we've been saving up, you know, talking about this for when the first season was over. And first, I think, Dana, don't we have some news about that?
It got renewed!
And there was much rejoicing.
Hooray!
Dollhouse has been renewed for a second season.
Like, 11th hour miracle.
Yes.
My god, Fox is actually developing a brain.
Interestingly enough, they did cancel King of the Hill and Sarah Connor Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Let's try
Terminator.
That
Let me try that one more time. Once more with verbiage.
What's scary is they did that in the face of Terminator Salvation coming out.
See, I'm assuming it's because of Terminator Salvation coming out that they're canceling it.
But think of how many people are going to see that movie and then say, oh, there's a Terminator thing on TV. I think I'll watch that. I suspect that they've seen Salvation and think that it sucks, and so that's why they don't want to be affiliated.
Actually, this has happened before in the past. I recall that it was either the producers of Smallville or it was like the Superboy show. It was a while back ago that there was rumors of a new when there were first rumors of another Superman movie coming out, that the TV series that was on at the time ended up getting canceled because they did not want to confuse viewers. You know, that kind of assumption of Hollywood that that people are stupid and can't separate between two different properties.
Seriously.
Well, you know, I want to complain about studios thinking that the viewers are really retarded, but then again, I look at what's on TV, like Rock of Love or whatever, and I'm like, you know what,
oh,
we sort of have it coming.
I hear plenty about Rock of Love from a bunch of my other friends who are totally into it.
I
could not get through 5 minutes of any of those episodes. I Love New York, Flavor of Love, The Bachelor 33 and a Third.
I'm moving away from traditional television and just going completely internet media.
No, I'm still, I mean, this is something we've talked about in a previous episode. I'm still watching pretty much, you know, aside from, you know, the special shows like Dollhouse, I'm pretty much watching, like, Discovery Channel and Ace of Cakes. And that's pretty much it. Ace of Cakes, by the way, astounding show. If nobody else has seen it, it's on the Food Network. Check your local listings. Also, there are episodes up on Fancast, which is like Hulu, but for CBS and the other networks that don't want to put their stuff on Hulu for some reason.
I watch it when Carl's watching it because,
isn't
you know,
it great?
God knows he's always tuned to the Food Network.
Well, he and my little sister.
Yeah.
So.
All right. But I want to mention something else that's going on. May 25th is Geek Pride Day, apparently. Apparently this started a couple years ago in Spain, where it was called Dia del Orgullo Friki, which is, the friki is, I guess, an equivalent of geeks and nerds over there. And it just kind of sounds dirty, but it started in about 2006. And apparently today, the 25th, I wanted to say today, I don't know why, but the 25th, they picked that because that's the premiere of the first Star Wars movie in 1977. I know.
It's a big day in geek history.
What's hysterical and kind of offensive is I'm looking at the Wikipedia site for it, for Geek Pride Day, and there's a manifesto. And you've got to hear this. The basic rights and responsibilities of nerds, right?
Hit us.
Number one, the right to be even nerdier. The right to not leave your house. The right to not have a significant other and to be a virgin. The right to not like football or any other sport. the right to associate with other nerds, the right to have few friends or none at all, the right to have all the nerdy friends that you want, the right to not be, quote, in style, end quote, the right to be overweight and have poor eyesight, the right to show off your nerdiness, the right to take over the world. Of course!
Of course!
And there's other Geek Manifesto things. Are you done? You gotta work on the evil laugh.
I gotta go see if the vocal coach really gotta strengthen the...
You didn't get your PhD in Horribilosity, did you?
No. Horribilosity etudeness. Etude.
But anyway, yeah, there's a lot of controversy going around because there's things like this.
Now, here's
and
the
there's
thing.
Video...
Okay. Here's the thing, though. I mean, you say that, yes, I mean, a lot of those are fairly disparaging, but they also say, you know, that's the right to be able to do that. Doesn't mean that any of those are mandatory or mutually exclusive.
It's not mandatory, but the fact that they put mostly disparaging things there,
mm-hmm.
it's not like it is anything to be ashamed of, but at the same time, it just reinforces the live in your parents' basement, you know, wear a red shirt, Kevin, stereotype.
At the same time, you could basically just sum that all up into one sentence, and that is the right to be an individual and have your own beliefs, wants, desires, and social preferences. You don't need to have these specific things which talk about disparaging stereotypes about geeks and nerds.
What I think they should have done is added one and said the right to be proud of all of this.
Yes, and that's really what that all comes down to, because there are plenty of people. I do have geek friends that are, you know, meet most, if not all, of those qualities on that list, you know, disparaging as they may be, and will defend to their death the right to be that way and are proud of that. Now, does that mean that, you know, they should be proud of that? Yes. Does that mean that it's not disparaging? No, it's still pretty stereotypical. It's still, you know, the stuff that a lot of people have been fighting this image of how nerds are, and it still gets reinforced by, unfortunately, the way that nerds are, more often than not.
This is something that Will Wheaton brought up on his blog about a week or so ago. There's a video making the rounds with Will in it, and Steve Wozniak, and a couple of, you know, a bunch of other people. Who are celebrated as nerds, and they're doing this whole, it's a 2-minute video, and we're going to link to it in the show notes, about, you know, I do this and this and this, and this is what makes me geeky. But on the other hand, his issue with it was there's a lot of people in there saying what they don't do, like, you know, even in Will's thing, he's like, I speak JavaScript and CSS, not Klingon, which I don't believe anyway. I'm sure he speaks fluent Klingon. But his umbrage with it was that there's a lot of people focusing on, you know, almost like it's a shameful thing, you know, like, well, I don't do this, but I'm still a geek. And his other issue was that there's so many people out there, celebrities, like, for example, Shaq and MC Hammer on there. When you think of them, the first word you do not think of to pigeonhole them is geek.
Same with Vin Diesel, although he is a very... avid and very public Dungeons & Dragons player.
Yeah, aware of that. But the problem is that, and the one that I kind of have, is that, well, it sort of looks like they're just sort of capitalizing on geek being cool. I mean, but when it comes down to...
21st century, nerds are in.
Yeah, apparently, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, it's fine and all for you guys to come out as geeks, if that's what you want to do, but it sort of feels like, well, you're safe admitting that because you have something else that you're famous for.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Nobody's going to immediately pigeonhole you as a geek, especially somebody like Shaquille O'Neal. There's no way somebody's going to just instantly look at him and go...
Nerd! Granted, he did do Shazam.
No, that's just something to be very ashamed of.
He did. Not Shazam.
Oh, Kazam, wasn't it?
I stand corrected.
You're kind of sitting down, aren't you?
Well, I sit corrected.
Well, good. I'm glad you found something with lumbar support.
Thank you.
But that's the thing, though. A lot of these celebrities are really they say they're geeks because they use Twitter.
Yeah, there's that. Ashton Kutcher, we're looking at you. But it's like, it's all fine if you want to, like, come and play in our cavern, but that sounded really dirty. But it's like, it's safe for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, look at us. We were unpopular before it was cool. I think I just wrote a t-shirt.
That's going to be the new slogan for the show, I think. Made a fail. We were unpopular before it was cool.
I want merchandise now. We should get a logo.
Oh, definitely.
Wheaton's problem with it, basically, is that it seems like they were just told to say they were geeky because basically their agents and their publishers told them, hey, say you're geeky, say you do this. And, like, mm-hmm. Hey, sure, they'll do some of the things they actually do on the list, but it doesn't actually just make them geeks. There is no sign-up card for being a geekdom. And sure, we'll joke on the internet, oh my god, you've never read The Silmarillion, you must not be, you're not really a geek, your geek foo is not accurate. But it's not like that. It's not just knowledge. And
we're not comparing lightsaber size here, guys. I mean, yeah. Seriously.
it's one of those things where you just really can't put a general descriptor about it.
It's but at just... the same time, here's the problem that I'm having and that Will was having. It's that our gut reaction is to be like, you guys aren't geeks, get out of our playground. But at the same, and then we stop and we think about what we just said. And then we're like,
the thing.
Shit,
we're being
exclusionary. And that's not what being a geek is all about. Being a geek, if you want to follow that sort of, you know, pigeonhole, it's a really inclusionary, is that a word? Inclusive?
Inclusivity.
I'll make shit up and people will pretend
we
they
come
understand.
From the Joss Whedon school of
reverbification.
Just go
Thank
right
you.
Ahead. Seriously.
I swear you could set lines. I could just program you next time.
It's just one of those things. I mean, seriously.
But being a geek is supposed to be an inclusive sort of thing. And it's almost a badge of honor to have, like, those battle scars. You know what I mean? It's I don't feel like, you know, these new celebrities that are coming out as geeks really earned their geekosity. I don't buy it when they say, you know, like, I'm a geek, because I don't feel like they were tormented in high school. I'm sure all three of us here probably had, like, you know, horrible, horrible high school. Oh, you're a geek, you couldn't get a date, blah, 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 that sort of thing.
Well, not high school. By high school, actually, I was the cool kid because I was, you know, smart and funny.
Where did you go to high school?
You're not allowed in this show anymore. Seriously.
Yeah, get
sorry.
Out of here.
I, wait a minute. We're being exclusionary again. Anyway.
See? That's the gut reaction.
The one celebrity I would actually paint in terms of geekdom, I don't think he's ever actually fully declared himself one, but considering some of the knowledge and expressions of stuff that he does, Stephen Colbert.
Oh, dear God, yes. Seriously. He's... Well, I think this actually touches upon what I was gonna say, and if I could be so bold as to say that there really is one only qualification of being a geek. There's many reasons for being a geek, but there's only one real qualification. Let me run that by you guys real quick. Being a geek means not being afraid to say that you like what you like, not being ashamed of liking. Being a fan, being how you are. Granted, yeah, there are many more specific things that would qualify for that, but that's really what it all boils down to.
Yeah, I definitely. Yeah, I'd say you got something there.
It comes down to the whole, like, definition between a dork, a nerd, and a geek is where you've got a dork is somebody who's socially awkward.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a nerd who's really into, like, technology and that sort of thing. And then
chess club.
Yeah. And then the geek is somebody who finds a fandom, finds something that they love, and gets really, really into it. But not just that, wants to share it with the world. And if you really want to, like, split hairs about it, that's kind of why we started this show, is we had a lot of things that we really loved and wanted to share with the world, and that's...
Episode 1, our Machine Girl reviews, actually got a few people that I actually know in person to watch that just because they listened to that on the show.
Oh, God, we've gotten people all over the place. I got some people to watch Kyle XY. I got some people to watch Dollhouse, you know, play Final Fantasy, that sort of thing. And I love that because then it feels like, you know, you're spreading things that make people happy and, you know, just neat stuff. And it puts a smile on somebody's face.
Yeah, we're not too cool to like something, which means that we're able to experience a much broader a range of everything that really entertains us, that we really enjoy, and the fact that we don't put those labels on things, that we don't exclude things just because they're quote-unquote beneath us, beneath our status, our reputation, really makes us win out in the long run.
Yeah. I mean, that's really, I think, the whole definition of geekdom, is being so into something that you want to share it with everybody in the world.
No matter how much they may want to make fun of you.
No matter how much anybody makes fun of you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, even Lewis, I bet you, I mean, why would you even, like, do these comic reviews if you didn't want to, like, you know, share some
share
sort
your
of
opinions.
Laughter? Or yeah. Share your pain, in your case.
Yeah.
At the same time, I want to bring people in and educate them about comic books and you know, get... Well, there's a lot of talk about the comic industry being dead and needing fresh blood, and I would like to say that I'm doing my part with this because I get emails all the time from people saying, dude, I took your recommendation, and I love it. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. I'm really sorry this got canceled.
Yeah, that's pretty much everything. Right?
I would like to think that we here at Made a Fail are pulling our own part in all of this. And...
I'm trying to think of something that hasn't been canceled yet that's really, really good right now, and all I can come up with is Fables.
In terms of comic books?
Yeah.
Booster Gold.
Well, okay, fine. Yeah, I
Buffy
shut
Season
up.
8.
All right!
Gargoyles, although I think Gargoyles, they've just given up on.
Nobody loves Very Tired Dana. But yeah, Lewis, you're mostly known as a comic geek throughout the internet, but is there anything else that you're really into that you'd like to share with your viewers?
Why? Horizons.
I'm also a geek in terms of Star Trek.
Yes.
Excellent.
Nice segue.
Well, speaking of Star Trek, we did get, and actually, I want to thank you, Dana, for doing this. You actually went out to your local GameStop and overheard. You tell the story, because this is your story, actually.
I was at GameStop trading in some stuff for my husband's birthday so he could get some new games. Mm-hmm. And the two clerks at the desk there were just ranting on and on about Star Trek. I want to make a disclaimer before I get started on this. And I've gotten a ton of crap from people about this already. Not only have I not seen the new Star Trek movie... I have no desire to see it, and that's why I'm getting crap. And I'll I'll tell you why. It's because the original series has never had... It's never interested me. It's never pulled me in. DS9 never pulled me in. Enterprise, Voyager, whatever. My Star Trek is Next Generation. Mm-hmm. And I got some crap from my friend Casey about, like, you know... Well, but without, you know, the original series, there would be no Next Generation, and you're not giving them props. And I'm like, no, I never said that. I can appreciate the original series from an artistic standpoint, and I will absolutely give it kudos for being the progenitor and the originator and all that, those other $5 words that I'm throwing around. Artistically, it's fantastic. On a personal enjoyment level, it just kind of bores me. I love the characters in Next Generation more than anything, and I know there's been some spill between Next Generation and DS9, but for me, it's the whole cast or nothing. You know, I gotta have my Picard, my Riker, my Troy. It has nothing to do with my insane lust for Wesley Crusher, asterisk, totally does.
No, that's fair enough, in your own opinion, though. I would say give DS9 another look, if only for the later seasons.
Mind if I interject here? I'm just gonna say, and I'm gonna try and stave off all the hate mail that we're going to be getting, or the one or
that
two
I'm gonna be
hate
getting.
Mail that we're gonna be getting, and say that, you know what, you are entitled to your opinion. You don't like the original series; it holds no interest to you. There's nothing wrong with that. You're not saying that it sucks.
I'm not a geek enough. No, it doesn't. Saying, it doesn't suck at all. It doesn't suck at all.
You're not
it's
saying that it's stupid. You're not saying that it doesn't deserve to have a movie. You're just saying that you personally have no interest in this, and that's perfectly fine. I will go on the record and say that I've seen about 3 or 4 episodes of the original series. I would like to see more, but I never really got into it when I was younger, and you know it was on during hiatus for Next Generation. I'm going to preface this by saying that Star Trek has been absolutely huge in my family. Both of my parents watched it when it was originally on what was it, NBC, ABC, whatever channel was on at the time. They watched it originally. They were huge fans. They have seen all the movies many, many, many times. My mom's favorite is Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, because it's wacky fun. There's lots of time travel. My dad's favorite is the perennial favorite, Wrath of Khan. And when Next Generation came on in the late 80s, it was always on every week on ABC, I think it was, and we would sit down and watch it every week. And when it was on hiatus, sometimes they'd put in episodes of the old series, and I never really got into it as a kid. It really took me until, you know, recently to appreciate it for what it was. Not saying that you're going to... I'm not telling you, Dana, that you're going to grow into it, because that would be disrespectful, and probably is not going to be the case anyway. But it's something to look... that I really have just a lot of personal respect for.
Why don't you marry it?
I would, but Jillian would get jealous.
I'll 2 seconds, because you kind of huge tangented in like the middle of my story there. But the end of it was that it took me about 5 seconds to pimp the show, and I told the guy to email in his review of the show, and he's like, "Yes, I love ranting," so he did so.
He did. He wrote this absolutely huge email, which
let's let Lewis get his 2 cents in.
All right, I'll give you my 2-minute review of it. I did a 30-minute vlog about it, but I can be quicker and sum it up here. I thought it was a good movie. I just didn't think it was a very good Star Trek movie. In terms of action and adventure, it was full of it, though it seemed to just go rapidly from action point to action point to action point. It was very well acted. I loved all the people who they got for it, even Kirk, even if he was kind of a jerk in the actual story. Everyone was very convincing in their roles. Some stuff came out of left field in terms of writing, like the Uhura and Spock relationship. Not sure what the heck the deal was with that, even if apparently they were instructors or something, but I'm getting off on a tangent. Most of my problems result from major continuity flubs in the fact that this is supposed to be now an alternate universe, which is all well and good, except time travel has never worked like that in Star Trek. My other beef with it is that if this is an alternate universe, well, I'm just not interested in an alternate universe. I want to learn about the main Star Trek universe. What's happening there? Is Romulus really destroyed in the future? What happens in the main Star Trek universe? I'm not interested in going back and learning about these characters all over again from a new perspective. I want the next story. And people can say that Star Trek was dead, but that's the same kind of reasoning that gets people to retcon the stuff in comic books or any other story they feel needs a reboot. No, just get good writers on board to tell the next story. Create convincing characters, create good stories, and go from there. That's my 2-minute review.
Well, you came in at 1 minute and 42.8 seconds, so you know... Fail.
Fail, F minus minus.
Oh, pshaw.
Will not listen to review again.
50 DKP minus.
What?
Move on.
Kevin, you're up.
No, I'm up after the fan mail.
Oh, right. Well, you know, this is going to get interjected with a lot. So anyway, guy's name's Kyle, and please don't confuse him with the Wonder Kitty. I'm going to have to skip a whole big chunk of this just for time constraints.
Don't worry about time constraints,
really,
Dana.
But it's really, really long. Okay, so anyway, he did have a good time watching the movie. And he says, all right, I'm going to start quoting now. I think the cast was pretty fantastic and is easily the best thing going in the movie. Pine was fantastic. Siler played Spock like he was psychotic but holding it together. Sulu is fine. Chekhov is fine. Simon Pegg is capable of anything, and I wish he was in more of it. Even his wacky pipe ride, which reminded me a little of R2-D2 and C-3PO's adventure in Attack of the Clones. After that, I think it goes downhill very, very fast. Now, I'm not one of those people who can easily turn off my brain and just enjoy a movie. I just can't. Michael Bay movies do very little for me, and I find myself bored during them. Star Trek wasn't boring, but it was just as brainless as a Bay film. I mean, come on. The villain is a space miner. A space miner. Seriously, a space miner with a mining vessel that can somehow shoot missiles is the villain.
Apparently, the prequel comic explained where he got those missiles from.
What I cannot accept is the unbelievable reliance on coincidence. It's like the screenwriters watched the Star Wars prequels and thought the fact that everyone knew Vader as a child was a good plot point. Hint, it was not. Spock throws Kirk off the ship and onto the frozen planet, another point stolen from Star Wars. Then he's chased by a large creature, eaten by a larger creature, Star Wars again. And yet he somehow runs into the exact cave that the future Spock is hiding out in. What the fuck? Come on.
Yeah, that did seem like a big plot convenience playhouse right there when I was sitting in the theater thinking, you just happened to run into him.
I'm holding my comments until the end. Keep going.
I can forgive it. It's one of those dramatic license things I have to forgive in movies. But anyway, continue.
This cave happens to be within walking distance of a Federation outpost that seems to be manned by one person, two if you count the Ewok. Then future Spock shows Scotty the equation he has yet to discover, yet he tells Kirk 2 seconds later that he cannot tell the present Spock of his existence because it could change the future. Are you fucking kidding me?
Okay, let me interject here. This is actually touched upon later in the movie. Where Spock Prime, an official term for him, meets up with Zachary Quinto Spock and explains to him that he said that to Kirk to make him think that, just so for whatever plot purposes, that really wasn't the case.
That basically he told him that so they could bond together actually as friends without future Spock just telling them, you will be friends.
Right. That's what he said. So that's excusable, and it's explained in the movie. So that part, let it go. Anyway, continue.
Here's another question for you. What the hell was Nero doing for those 25 years while waiting for future Spock to arrive? Apparently, he was not attacking anything, even though he had this super ship.
Actually, yes, he... Okay.
Hold on. He still keeps going, so hold on. How did he know the exact time and location of Spock's arrival? Apparently, Romulan miners are also able to read tea leaves. And yet another question. When he had his 5-second fight with Kirk, how did he know that he had killed Kirk's father when he arrived? I'll accept that a Romulan may know what a young Captain Kirk looks like because he's famous in their timeline, but the movie explicitly says that this is a new timeline, and we find out that Kirk knew his father in the other timeline. So how did Nero know he killed Kirk's father?
Okay, well, here's the thing. He didn't know when Spock was going to arrive. He just knew that that Spock went through the same black hole that he did, so he would arrive sometime in the past, which is evidenced by the fact that he went and assaulted that Federation ship and said, "Where's Spock?" And they're like, "Who?" And he was like, "Damn it, we're here too soon." And so he spent those 25 years. This is kind of a jumping to conclusion, but this is when
you get to the airport 2 hours early, and then your flight gets delayed.
No. But what I'm saying is just conjecture, but it actually makes sense. It's one of those just kind of common sense things where Nero and his ship kind of just hangs around that nebula for the next 20 years, waiting, and he does attack things in the future. They go and assault an outpost in Klingon territory. That's explained when Uhura says that she discovered that whole transmission that nobody else was supposed to hear in Klingon space, that they were being attacked by the super Romulan ship. It was, I would imagine that was probably a supply raid so that they could keep going with food and power while they're still waiting for Spock to arrive. They don't know when he's going to come, so they keep sending out raiding parties just to supply them. They don't dare leave the nebula.
See,
it makes sense.
Yeah, see, I had the same thing. I knew he wasn't just sitting around there, but I didn't know when. I don't understand how he knew when he was going to show up. And we know that he knew he was going to show up because there's a bit of dialogue where he says, "This is he's supposed to be here." And Nero's like, "Just wait, just a bit longer." And yeah, Nero wasn't just on his butt for the next.
No, but that can still be explained by him saying, "Well, if he's not here now, he'll get here eventually."
But it seemed like he was pretty much on the dot, knew it was going to be that point, is the weird thing. And yeah, it's also very weird that he knew Kirk's father was on this ship. That just seemed like, how to figure that out?
I will give you that, however, something to consider. Perhaps, and this is kind of a stretch, perhaps when they were doing those supply raids, which are not canon, that was my conjecture, when they were doing those supply raids, they went and read up on history so that they knew exactly what's going on in their timeline so that they can be more prepared when they do finally do that whole assault the Federation thing.
A possibility, yeah.
It's a possibility. It's not really said that that's the case, but it could make sense. It's not as much of a jump to really believe that, but I will give you that. I mean, that's that him knowing who Kirk's father was, that could have been, you know...
So it does really beg the question of why the audience has to fill in these holes for the screenwriters.
The Marvel No Prize. And there's only so much exposition you can do in a 2-hour movie anyway.
True enough, but then one
this could be I mean I also haven't read the novelization. There's always lots more explanation, lots more exposition in a novelization.
But not everyone's going to go and read the novel.
No, and for the people who don't really care to go and look for this kind of thing, then it could be just, hey, just accept it, let it go. It's a good movie. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things where you just have to say, okay, it's a stretch, let's move on.
Well, apparently it bothers some people.
the fact that their shirts were not the exact weave as they were in 1966 is going to
There's always going to be some.
Do you remember remember Superman? If
you're really nitpicky about something like that, I would say the fact that they're using that logo when it's supposed to only be the logo for the Enterprise and not just enough for all Starfleet.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's really going to be that nitpicky.
I love there watching you guys.
The engine room looked like it came out of Space Mutiny.
Were there railing kills?
Railing kills!
Were there railing kills?
On the Romulan ship, they have no railings.
There were ledge kills, and there... You know what? I'm going to go ahead and say yes, it's a stretch. There were a few railing kills on the big fight above Vulcan on the giant space drill.
Beef hardtack.
It's kind of a stretch to say this, but yeah, there were some quote-unquote railing kills.
Hold on to your hats. We're going to be reaching speeds of 3. Sorry.
Ludicrous speed. Go!
They've gone to plaid.
I knew it. I'm surrounded by assholes.
There we go.
What? You went over my helmet?
Now we're getting into geekdom right here.
No.
Yeah, when we can have an entire conversation in movie references, that's something else entirely.
You know what? That's another part of what makes at least me a geek is I can do that for about an hour straight. But nobody's tuning in for that. Let's get back to the letter here.
Anyway, continue.
What's next on the letter?
Plus, Spock says that he needs to go to Nero's ship because he would know his way around it. Then he leaves Kirk to take out the ship with the red matter, and then, even though this is a huge ship and Kirk would not know his way around it, within a matter of minutes, without running into any other Romulans, he finds his way to, essentially, the bridge.
Okay. Basic ship architecture within something.
A wizard did it!
Is going to be the same. I mean, the bridge on one Romulan ship is probably going to be in the same rough direction as the bridge on another Romulan ship, no matter what time frame it's at.
Lewis, you want to come in with its magic, bitch?
Oh, no, but I do kind of remember an episode of Next Generation where it turns out the engine room for a Bird of Prey is actually right next to the bridge.
That seems kind of precarious.
Yeah.
And it was probably used as a plot point.
No, not really.
No.
Just Just as the Nitpicker's Guide for Next Generation Trekkers once said, IITS, it's in the script.
Yep.
Okay, anyway. Next up we got, plus, how about that mining laser? Why exactly would a mining laser be capable of blocking ship transmissions and the use of the transporter? I guess the mining of the future is multi-purpose.
It's putting out a shit ton of power. That's going to mess with electronics all over the place. I mean, why do you think they ask you to turn off your laptop, turn off a Game Boy when you're on an airplane?
Well, you would think in the 23rd century or wherever it is, you know, they'd have perfected that by then.
Yeah, but...
Well, the reason they put it on airplanes because the signals given off by them can interfere with radio signals done by the tower.
Right, so these are radio signals. What's the transporter using?
Magic.
Wonderflonium.
Oh, God, he's going to bounce it!
Don't touch the phlebotinum in Beaker C. And only the people who have watched the commentary for...
you're being excluded.
The Harvest. Are going to get that.
The neutron flow.
Bad.
There we go.
This
bounce the graviton particle beam off the main deflector dish.
Using multimodal reflection sorting, we have...
Curse you and say no!
Lewis, if you do that, you're going to set up a temporal feedback loop that'll tear the ship apart.
Are you guys going to start crossing the streams? Should I leave?
Yes. Okay.
This brings me to the action.
Yes, we are.
Nice segue. I was not all that impressed with it, to be honest. The opening battle was cool. The car chase with the young Kirk was ridiculous and served no plot purpose. But it
was explodey.
If its purpose was to show a rebel Kirk, then it's redundant, because the very next scene shows him getting into a drunken bar fight and refusing to join Starfleet. The fighting on the mining laser was sloppy, probably on purpose, but still it was merely a two-on-two fight that showed poor fighting skills on Kirk's part and passable sword skills on... Sulu got into a sword fight? Sweet.
Yeah. Yep.
There were no...
I was worried about that scene, actually, because I kept thinking, like, oh, man, fans are going to say this is the jump the shark moment right here. It's going to be fans are going to say, Sulu's fighting doing a sword fight on a giant drill. That's going to be the
Sulu
two.
Sulu just does sword fights in the original series anyway, so it
in that one episode.
Yeah, but how many things did they pull for this movie that were in one or two episodes?
Yeah,
Wrath of Khan completely based off of?
No, the problem was that if you look at those TOS episodes where he is sword fighting, it's usually like magic convenience, either the Naked Time where he's drunk, or Day of the Dove, where all the weapons have been replaced with swords. That being said, I didn't think there was any problem with the actual sword fighting on the drill. It just seemed like the kind of thing that fans would harp upon, but no one seems to have a big problem with it. I liked the collapsible sword.
Seriously. That was awesome.
That was an awesome idea. I've always wanted to see something like that.
Guys, you're forgetting the most obvious explanation here. Sulu's Japanese. They all know about sword fighting and karate.
Well,
it's funny because it's racist.
No, 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 no.
Good night, everybody.
Dan has the line of the evening.
Oh, I'm so sorry. And again, you know, once again, I did the same thing in episode one. I forgot how to say I'm sorry in Japanese. I know it. I just blank on it when I'm on air. Huh?
Gomen nasai, I think.
Gomen nasai. I'm sorry. Oh, boy. Okay, so anyway.
Next on the letter.
There were no space battles outside the opening, one worth mentioning. The fight on Nero's ship was good at first. I did like the use of the phasers, but ultimately short and unsatisfying. I wonder how my ex-boyfriend is doing. Anyway, the Enterprise fires a bunch of missiles and lasers at Nero's ship as it is being sucked into the black hole, but they do no noticeable damage. I found none of the action all that special. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I tend to agree. The action was nice for what it was, but the space battles were very disappointing. It was always very close-up shots of the ship then firing and no, like, you know, maneuvering around. If you look at, like, the space battles in, say, Star Trek First Contact, where you have lots of ships flying around, but there's a sense of movement, and you can see ships firing and doing damage. With this movie, it seemed like just pew, 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 explosion. Pew, 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 explosion. Pew, 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 explosion. No action.
That's why people go to theaters.
Yeah, but no actual consequences for the fighting. I mean, going back further, Star Trek II, Wrath of Khan. The space battles in that were very controlled. Every single fight had a purpose and did something that altered the dynamics of the next fight.
Now, I'm going to have to disagree with both you and Kyle on this. I mean, one, you've got the huge imbalance between the superpowered Romulan ship and the Constitution-class Federation ship, which, ahead of its time, not ahead of Nero's time. Not a contest. The fact that they were using such specific tactics to be able to defeat something so advanced actually was incredibly impressive, really mind-blowing, especially what I really loved, what they did in the very first space battle between the Kelvin and the Romulan ship, and what they did right at the end, where the Enterprise pops in for that final cavalry moment, mm-hmm. is that pinpoint precision, taking out the missiles with phaser blasts right before they hit both the shuttlecraft and future Spock's ship. That was just really subtle, but really, really awesome how they pulled it off, how they did that, and again, absolutely mind blowing. So I'm just gonna disagree with you guys. The space battles, while they could have been a lot more epic, were perfectly fine not being so.
Hmm. All right, want me to do the last couple paragraphs here?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure.
How about that red matter stuff? One drop sent in the core of a planet creates a black hole that literally sucks the planet into itself. But when the entire ball is shot in a Nero ship, the black hole just forms and slowly pulls it in, not really causing a whole lot of damage. Did Nero really die? I'm not sure he did.
It's going to be a Star Trek movie. There's going to be plot holes big enough you can drive a Constitution-class starship through.
There was a...
But isn't that lazy screenwriting then? Why do there have to be plot holes? Why can't you think this stuff through before you film it? Why do you have to just assume that?
Someone did a scientist broke down the scientific things they did well and things they did not do well in this movie, and the red matter and the black holes were really out there of how they did not really make any sense. The red matter and the black hole stuff was really bad in their mind. Then again, Star Trek seems to have always had this problem with black holes. I recall a Voyager episode that really did just... The opinionated Star Trek reviewer, it's a YouTube video series, did a great send-up of this. The idea that the assumption is that you can somehow break through... You can go past the event horizon of a black hole, you know, the point of no return where it doesn't matter how much you fight it, it's going to pull you in. There's nothing you can do to escape it. And there's an assumption a lot of times in Star Trek where you can break free from it. You just have to do something else to do it. In this case, in the Star Trek movie, they ejected the warp core and used the explosion to force them out, which would be kind of a nice idea, except as we see in the science of that, and explosions don't work in space the same way they do on a planet with an atmosphere, especially since there's not as much of a not really that much of a concussive force, because a lot of that is moving through air,
mm-hmm.
which you don't have in space.
Well, the explosion, there was the fireball of the deuterium crystals, dilithium. Deuterium is Galaxy Quest. Of the dilithium crystals, they were actually inside the explosion, so there wasn't the concussive force of the explosion pushing the air back, but there was also all that particles. The particles of the explosion were pushing them, so I'm not trying to do it justice, but
I just had a really big stupid moment listening to that. I was thinking to myself, how can something even burn in space? And then I'm like, retard, what do you think stars are?
Mm-hmm.
More caffeine.
Our chain reactions of plasma and various other things.
Sun is a mass of incandescent gas, a gigantic nuclear furnace, where hydrogen is built into helium at a temperature of millions of degrees.
But
Yeah, actually, point and laugh at the girl.
Actually, the science thing that they really thought should have been that really just had me tilting my head when I first heard it. The supernova that threatened the galaxy.
Yeah, that.
I was like, wait, what? What's so special about a supernova? A supernova is a star exploding. It only affects a star system that it's in. And in fact, the science article also says that what would have been cooler, both special effects wise and more logical to actually do damage to systems, is a gamma ray burst. Read it here. Gamma ray bursts are like supernova, where instead of the explosion moving outward in a spherical shell, the energy is focused into twin beams of cosmic fury. These blowtorches of doom could easily set a planet aflame from even hundreds of light years away, and the special effect for it would have been a bazillion times cooler in the movie.
Feels like Stan Lee was narrating that.
Star Trek's always been...
In about a nanosecond, I just wrote, like, Star Trek Incredible Hulk fanfic.
Anyway, but no, my opinion on that, yeah, it's a leap, and I'm just perfectly fine, perfectly content to go, okay, Star Trek, galactic physics have always been, prone to delusions of grandeur, just for plot purposes, just because it sounded cool at the time.
Speaking of, you'll notice this is actually the first Star Trek movie, or even Star Trek in TV, where we have where we have fight scenes outside where there is no sound in space.
Mm-hmm.
That was a nice touch.
They still had some scenes where there is sound in space. A lot of times when the ships were passing by the camera, but they actually did touch on that a lot of things there's no sound in space until they ignite in the atmosphere.
Mm.
That whole space jump, the orbital jump down to the bottom of the mining laser,
yep,
was one of them. You didn't really hear too much sound except for the transmissions from the headset radios. Until they hit the atmosphere.
Yeah, what was up with that idiot red shirt who said like, "Yeah, I'm gonna ride it only 1,000 kilometers and then."
Yeah, he was wearing red. He was wearing red armor. Nobody was surprised when he got toasted.
Yeah, it seemed like...
Thank you, Ensign Strangelove. Like,
extremes.
Yes.
Extreme sports of space.
He was almost... There was this stand-up special where there was this Australian guy that said that Australians were the ones that were always like, oh yeah, let's do it. Come on, yeah, more power, let's do it. And that guy sounded Australian. And I was like, I was making that connection in my head between that movie... and that one stand-up special I saw once. Random connections. That was the second joke of the podcast, thank you.
For those of you counting.
Hello, inside jokes. So, anyway, we're being inclusive again.
Ha-ha.
The letter?
No, that was basically it. He just sort of signs off from there. He's like, I enjoyed the movie, I enjoyed it while I was playing, but a lot of problems listed above were bothering me during the film. Some I thought of later while discussing it. It makes me interested in seeing another film where they don't need to establish all the characters and hopefully not use so many elements of Wrath of Khan. Even better, maybe it won't remind me of the Star Wars prequels. Not a great start to the summer for me. Anyway, there's my 2 cents. Keep up the great work, Kyle.
Now, I didn't do what I said I was going to do and hold off on all my comments until the end, but I'm going to go ahead.
I knew you could.
I'm going to go ahead and touch upon my opinion on the movie, and honestly, it looks like I'm in the minority here, and I'm going to say this was an excellent movie, and it was really keeping in with the whole feel of a Star Trek movie. You had just the sense of epic awesomeness. You had the hope for a non-dystopian future that... was the original point of Star Trek, and some of the later Next Generation movies tended to kind of ignore that it's not supposed to be a whole dystopian future. It's supposed to be the great pinnacle of mankind and
utopian
beyond.
Even.
even touching upon the untouchable utopian ideal, yeah, seriously. Hmm. And that's why First Contact... was the best of the Next Generation movies, and it really went downhill from there. But that's another rant entirely. None of the movies after
Don't wreck it for me. Really, I haven't seen the Next Gen movies yet. I'm trying to watch the whole series.
You're gonna love First Contact.
I'm probably gonna love it all.
You're not gonna like the last one.
Oh, Nemesis? Because they cut Will Wheaton out of it, bastards.
He's not in any of them.
Yeah, I know. But he was in Nemesis, but then they cut
him. I have the special edition DVD with the cutscenes of a minute.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, find it for me online. I want to see. I know he's got like two lines, but still, that's my internet boyfriend. He talked to me twice. That means he's my boyfriend.
Yes, thank you.
Where women are concerned, I am in complete control.
Made of Restraining Order, Episode 4. But no, this Star Trek movie really did keep in the whole theme of that, and it was, granted, they could have cut a few things short and had more time for exposition. The whole wacky tube ride with Scotty, Simon Pegg, it was fun, but they could have shaved that by about half of it and still have gotten the whole point across. Yay, this is wacky fun. Uh-oh, he's about to die. Yay, Kirk saves him. Casting was phenomenal. Having everybody with the exception of Chekhov looked like their characters, and we can explain away why the new Chekhov didn't look like Walter Koenig. I don't know how to pronounce his last name.
Alternate reality.
No, because he's 17 in this movie, and everybody looks different when they're a teenager. So
I didn't.
Yeah, but you still look like a teenager.
I know.
I do kind of why you have a 17-year-old on the bridge of the Enterprise, but...
Because he's a genius.
Hello, I think it's been established that they can do that.
Because Chekhov was a genius, and it was proved that he was a genius, and everyone was disparaging, oh, you're 17, oh, hey, look, you proved yourself.
God, that sounds fair. So familiar.
The rest of that.
Like I said, he did a fine job. I loved him talking to the computer, but the computer couldn't recognize his passcode.
Victor. Planet Vulcan. Yes, that got a huge laugh out of my theater, and that was another thing. Going and seeing this movie with a relatively full audience, and I've said this before for other movies, I absolutely love seeing movies in relatively full theaters so that you have the audience reactions. You have the standing up and applauding at the end. Rare, but it does happen. You have the laughing and all the funny parts. The gasping and the cheering and the jumping at the scary parts. It really makes a movie that much better. It gives it a feeling that you don't get when you're watching the DVD.
And that's the best part of being a geek, is the sense of community. I want to say that our subculture has, when you get a whole bunch of us together, we have way more fun than like any other clique out there.
Way more drama too, but that's beside the point.
Internet argument!
Oh, God, no.
Let's begin, Judge.
Oh, Internet.
Mike or Joel.
Not everything is a Jets and Sharks brawl, okay?
Yeah.
Little video to the contrary.
And a lot of the nitpicky things that even I was looking at in the movie, like, you know, again, the supernova thing. I was like, okay, it's Star Trek physics. Let's move on. Because this is not the first time in any of the incarnations, original series, Next Generation, everything, there's always just kicking it up a notch. It's not going to be, it doesn't really make too much sense in physics, but it makes for some damn good television. And
pretend
so
that they
just
fixed
one of those
it by
things.
Then.
Except for,
it's
except
just one of those things, Star Trek physics, let's move on.
Yeah. Except for Voyager, which they had a techno-babble explanation for everything, which just really turned...
Again, that's creating. Not that's anything
because
that's
Data
not
never did
new.
That.
No. With techno, here's the thing about Next Gen's techno-babble versus Voyager's techno-babble. You had techno-babble in Next Gen, but it was quick, to the point, then they quickly just explain it simple enough that you don't have to worry about the techno-babble. But with Voyager, everything you could remodulate or add some new gizmo, which they whipped up off the fly, that made absolutely no sense, and they used a lot more real world actual scientific terms, which didn't make any freaking sense in relation to what they were talking about.
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that I actually kind of enjoyed that. I mean, yes, it didn't make sense, but I kind of enjoy Techno Babble. It's why I read Michael Crichton books.
I think you should watch the opinionated Star Trek reviews, especially the Voyager stuff, because you really start looking in a new light.
I really should, and I think I'll enjoy looking back on it. But like I said, I kind of like just sitting back and enjoying the Techno Babble. That's why I was a huge fan of reading Jurassic Park and The Lost World, because that's half the book is just DNA strands and frog mutations and all of that.
And you guys are so cute,
like
bonding.
It.
Horrible.
Scrolling down in Kyle's letter. Again, a lot of the stuff I really didn't agree with Kyle, and I made known with that. The action was perfectly fine. What I think I loved about, you know, the cheesy battle on top of the mining laser and the cheesy Kirk and Spock battle inside the mining ship, which, did we ever get a name on that? I think there's a name for the ship, I don't remember what it is. Is that it still had the feel of, you know, the fight scenes in the original series, where you had a lot of ducking and rolling around and over-exaggerated arm movements, and it really felt like I was watching a new version of the original series episodes that I have seen, and it was just a lot more faithful to the feel. And that's really what the core of why I loved it and why you guys didn't like it so much. Like you guys
don't
were probably expecting. I'm not looking at you.
Well, you're also
you guys in general.
And me
because looking at it.
I didn't have much problems with it in terms of continuity relating to the original series. No, my problems mostly stem around the fact that trying to reboot it, which it doesn't need a reboot.
And that actually. This is actually the second alternate reality in Star Trek canon. Many of you may remember the Mirror Universe.
Yep.
Where everybody has goatees and are evil.
Yeah, I don't mind having alternate universes since they've established it. It's just, and actually, there's technically lots more alternate universes if you count the TNG episode Parallels, where Worf is traveling from one to the next. No, my problem with it is that they said this time travel did it, and time travel has never worked like that in Star Trek.
That, yeah, I did have a little problem with that, but then I started thinking, like, you know, again, Star Trek physics.
Yeah.
Let's move on. And also, having the reboot, and I mean, all these actors are signed on for at least one more, or two more movies should they greenlight the movies. Doesn't mean that they're going to be two more movies, but they're signed up for at least two more movies. Is that they can fully explore this new universe, which would be really, really neat. And what I think would work even better than doing, you know, new movies, a new TV series, which a lot of people I've heard saying there had better be a new TV series with this, and I'm actually kind of on the fence about that. But what they should do, is my opinion, is do what Star Wars Infinities did: alternate retellings of the same stories. In comic book format is a lot easier to do than doing huge movies and TV shows, which may even confuse people, but doing it in a comic book format gives them a lot more freedom, and it gives them, you know, opportunities to explain, okay, well, how did this universe's space seed and thus Wrath of Khan turn out with these characters' personalities being changed from how this happened with how the universe changed with how this happened. How about 100 years in the future, what's going on with the new Vulcan colony? What about Tuvok on Voyager? What's going on? How would this have affected him? And they can go into all this stuff, you know, the what if line of Marvel stories, and again the Star Wars Infinities, which I really need to pick up and read, because they're I've been hearing rave reviews about the Infinities books, or retellings of the original three movies, Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi, with, you know, major things having changed, and thus how has the rest of the story changed because of that? And I would love to read that. I'm going to need to look this up and see if I can order copies of those.
Kevin?
Yes?
You and Star Trek need to get a room, man.
Hey, I told you this may run long. Let it run long.
Well, okay. At some point, other people need to talk, man.
I'm wrapping up my section.
Okay.
But that's I've already, you know, geeked out over, you know, the subtleties of how they did things in this movie, as opposed to all the blatant epic awesome that Kyle is kind of missing, and said that he wanted more of, like the, you know, the pinpoint accuracy with taking out the space missiles, with the phasers, both at the way beginning and way at the end of the movie, all of that stuff. I've already gone over that, so I don't need to bring that up again. So, honestly, in my opinion, little niggly things didn't bother me. I'm perfectly content. I would see this in the theater at least 3 more times if I could. So, and I'm going to be ordering the DVD so hard.
That's what she said.
Yes.
Fair enough. We're all entitled to our own opinions about these things.
Unless it's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Just kidding. I'm kidding.
Yeah, you haven't seen it, so hey.
Well, opinions in general.
Yeah, no.
It's okay as long as you agree with me.
Right. Of course. We'll let you believe that, Dana.
The world's a mess, and I just need to rule it. Oh, it would help if I had ambition. Alright, fan mail?
Fan mail!
Captain, incoming message.
We've got a short letter here from Cody saying, "Hi, I'm a big fan who found the podcast through Atop the Fourth Wall blog."
Hey!
Thank you, Lewis.
Awesome!
Made a Fail is my favorite podcast so far. I like to listen to you guys while I'm writing. Excellent. What do you write, anyway? Dana, don't feel bad about the copying Final Fantasy. I did the same thing with my favorite game, Fable.
Yeah, some other people have plagiarized, haven't they, Lewis?
Yes, we all have.
Yes. I love all the guests you had on the show so far. Also, I wanted a Dana, get
oh,
ready.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I'm braced.
Yet another fan is going to be asking this.
I'll keep it short.
Also, I wanted to ask Dana, what do you think about Jackie Earle Haley as Freddy for the Nightmare on Elm Street remake? I'm just going to say...
Just finish it off.
Okay. I think he might be the only thing that might save it from being another bad remake of a great movie. Well, that's all I got to say. You two keep up the great work. And before Dana, you go again to, I'm just going to say, guys, listening to Dana's rants on how stupid the next the remake is going to be is all well and good, but I think we're going to have to, you know, say, you know, no more asking questions. Dana's keeping up on this. She does know everything that's going on. And she does.
We can't afford the asbestos lining for the internet.
Wait a second. Yeah. There's a Nightmare on Elm Street remake, and I was not informed.
Dude, okay. That's been
Dana.
Like...
Dana, by all means, go right ahead.
There is no remake. There is only Zool. La, 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 denial, denial, denial. No, okay, I do have to accept that they're doing it. I do not have to like it. I take great pleasure in not liking it. And rest assured, when it comes out, which is, as far as I know, April 16th, 2010, I will be outside my local theater with a giant-ass picket sign.
Down with this sort of thing.
Did they even
did they ask
Robert Englund to reprise his role?
He said he's too old for it.
Oh, pshaw. That part of the appeal of the guy, that he is the creepy old...
He's in full makeup anyway.
When you and I are done recording here, I want to talk with you for like 3 hours about this. I did not know you were a big fan of Nightmare. We have a lot to discuss.
Nightmare 3 is one of my favorite
books.
Yes!
Movies. Sorry, that's totally one of my favorites, too.
If they were going to cast Jack Earl Haley, that they could certainly...
It could have been worse. That, you know what? She asked, or he asked, could go either way. What do I think about Jackie Earl Haley? They could have done worse. That's my opinion. However, I have read reviews of the script... Granted, it's an early draft of the script, and they have changed things. Platinum Dunes has been blogging about it. They said they've gotten rid of some stupid stuff. But wow, if they keep even like 5% of what they put in there, it's gonna suck. I'm really not happy with what they're doing with the character of Nancy. But I think I'll save that. I think I'll save that for when the movie comes out next April. Because otherwise, I'm going to be going off very loudly and very angrily for a very long time.
You're going to be a ballistic Dana. We're going to point you in a direction of our enemy, and you're going to go off and explode.
The Dana Trebuchet!
There we go.
Okay, we've got one more from Sarah. This is, "Hi, Made of Failers. Dana, Kevin, Devin, Cleolinda, Jillian, and Tessa. I think we're forgetting somebody. Not sure who."
Cousin Oliver.
I thought that was hysterical that she forgot Adam. We love you, Adam.
I don't think it was intentional. I think she was going down the list.
But it's
and
still hysterical. Just had to write and thank you. I've been listening to your podcast since January. I stumbled on it while looking for Epic Fail on iTunes. Best mistake
Excellent.
Of the month, I'll tell you that. But enough about the horrors that were the beginning of the year. The last 3 weeks involved me pouring my free time into an idea that would drive me insane, but be awesome if it could be pulled off. A painting done from scratch using a technique that's a cross between expressionism and pointillism to rock an art competition. I started off listening to many different podcasts to focus, but none of them kept me going like yours. And in the last week, it was only a loop of Made a Fail and the song Neutron Dance that let me get it turned in under the wire. I hope I win, of course, but even if that doesn't happen, I think it's an awesome painting, and I feel you're partially responsible for that. Thanks, guys. And Dana." Oof, don't tell Jillian and Tessa and Cleo. and then she linked to it, which, you know, I think I'll put that in the show notes, because I looked at it,
I
really liked it, actually. It was really neat. I favorited it on my DeviantArt. So.
Thank you so much, Sarah. I mean, it's really the fans like you that I was hoping to get randomly through the iTunes thing. And
yeah.
Go ahead, tell all your friends this is great.
At
that
point.
Thank you. Welcome aboard. Yeah.
Do you have friends? Can you bring them? That's joke number 3.
Thank you. Leprechauno!
And I think that kind of wraps it up for this episode. And, you know,
yes.
Lewis, again, thank you so much for coming on and stretching your geek muscles, as it were.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for having me, and I'm glad to talk about my geekdom.
Yeah.
You're welcome on the show, you know, as often as you like to be. Just go ahead. Next time you want to talk about something specific, let us know.
And at some point, not sure whether we're going to do it halfway through or when it's completely over, but I would like to get you on eventually when we mention the Green Lantern Blackest Night comic event. Because that looks...
I'd be happy to come on and talk about it, because I'm excited about it.
Okay. And once again, if you want to hear more of Lewis and his nerdosity and his awesome bad comic reviews, you can find him at Atop the Fourth Wall, which is Atop Fourth Wall. blogspot.com. It's all words, no numbers. And at the main, That Guy with the Glasses site, which is just thatguywiththeglasses.com. And definitely spend some time there, because all the reviewers are hilarious and excellent, and they've been doing fantastic crossovers lately.
I feel incredibly proud to be working alongside these people.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, just congratulations on being a part of that family. And, you know, you never know. Maybe if I bother Mike enough, maybe someday we'll be... if not an affiliate, maybe the Cousin Oliver to That Guy with the Glasses someday.
That would be awesome if we could get that.
I would love to Made a Fail be a part of it, because even though I have not listened to as many of the podcasts, you guys are incredible, and thank you once again for having me.
Not a problem.
Thank you for coming, and I'd like to thank you all for listening. This has been episode 17. Of Made a Fail. I am Kevin.
I'm Dana, and a reminder that next month is our 1-year anniversary show, so don't forget to send in listener, you know, anything you want to ask us about us, about the show, things you want us to talk about in the coming episodes. More than happy to answer all your questions. So get on that.
Thank you for listening, and have a great night.
Hey everybody, this is Devin. Once again, I apologize for my sound card. I apologize, it's powered by an angry water elemental. I was your guest editor for this show. Hope you enjoyed it. If not, you can contact Captain and Dana through their email, which is made_of_fail@yahoo.com. You can also tell your friends to download this podcast at community.livejournal.com/made_of_fail_PC. And finally, you can reach them on the Twitter at made_of_, well, you know the rest.